Chapter 7. Hard to Tell Which. The uproar over the Barnard student's murder lasted about 3 weeks. Then campus life settled down to normal. Not that anyone lost interest in the subject or stopped discussing it. It remained the talk of the Upper West Side. My life returned to normal as well, my notoriety fading along with the scratches. Any additional knowledge I gained as to how the murder investigation was proceeding was limited to what I read in the Campus Daily Spectator and other New York papers. My last personal involvement had been when I phoned Detective Lippincott following my meeting with Dean Simmons and informed her about the dean's bandaged hand. She said she would look into it. The semester rolled on. By the end of October, the trees around the quads had changed their costumes from hospital greens to the colors of clown suits and jester outfits. The poet Joyce Kilmer attended the college in 1907 and 1908, and it would be curious to speculate about whether any of these stately trees could have been the inspiration for his famous poem, Trees. Tomorrow was Halloween and also the beginning of midterms. Perfect synchronicity, it turns out, for the ghostly incident that was about to take place. Around 10 o'clock that evening, I decided to take a break from studying and venture forth to a nearby deli for a sandwich. Passing through the vestibule and stepping into the out-of-doors, I felt the impact of the night's turbulent weather. Strong winds, ushering in from across the Hudson, were now violently shaking and ruffling the canopies of those trees as if they were the skirts of can-can dancers. Heading off campus via the granite steps of Carmen Gate, I noticed a strange-looking female on her way up, although maybe not so strange considering the season. She was dressed in witch's attire, her costume consisting of the traditional black gown, black cape, and pointy black hat. The hat was secured against the wind by a chin strap, and peeking out beneath it was a neon-pink straw wig. The topper to her outfit was a novelty store Halloween mask modeled after the old hag from Disney's Snow White. As soon as she saw me, she stopped climbing. Silent and spooky, she stood there, watching me come down. As I drew abreast of her, I realized she was too completely covered up for me to have any idea who she was, or even if I knew her at all. Another oddity, instead of a broomstick, she was hauling a bass fiddle, zipped in its brown canvas cover. I was fairly certain it didn't belong with the costume, and also fairly certain I didn't know anybody who played that instrument. Smiling at both her costume and her theatrics, I said, "Nice witch." She didn't reply. She continued staring, or perhaps glaring. It was hard to tell what was going on behind that mask. I indicated the big fiddle and said, "Must be easier getting around on that than a broomstick." This produced exactly no response whatsoever. Just the same chilling stare. So I continued passing along my way, which, generally speaking, is the advisable thing to do in New York City whenever you encounter odd, strange, or eccentric behavior, even if it is All Hallows' Eve. As I exited and turned onto Broadway, I glanced back over my shoulder. She hadn't moved, and she was still continuing to track me. This being exam week, both the Campus Inn and Tom's Restaurant were nearly devoid of the usual pack of idlers. But the sandwich lines in the deli shops were long and slow-moving. While taking my spot at the end of one line, I had plenty of time to study a beer advertisement that featured full-size cardboard cutouts of three vampire beauties wearing tight black dresses. One of them reminded me a little of Lonnie Kim, my Hawaiian girlfriend, minus the incisors. Sandwich, dill pickle, and chocolate drink in hand, I retrace my steps back to campus, fighting the buffeting blasts of wind that carried stinging grit and had enough strength behind them to force me to lean into them or take side steps against them. Reclimbing the Carmen Gate steps, the spooky witch had moved off. Back in Fernald and back inside my room, all was snug, but not all was quiet. In addition to the continuous rattling of my ill-fitting, double-hung window, there was the hiss and sputter of the radiator at the foot of my bed, with its periodic metal clangs issuing up the pipes. It was as if there were a working forge and village blacksmith operating in the basement. Returning to the grind, I sat down at my desk, twisting the cap off my chocolate drink, unwrapping my sandwich, and anchoring my open book on my desk so I could continue cramming while eating. I had wedged my door open to indicate social availability to any floor mates or friends wishing to drop by for a chat. I just swallowed my first bite, followed by my first sip, when a shadow from the hallway caught my attention. I turned to see the snow-white witch again, walking towards me. She was minus her big fiddle. She stopped in the doorway, again remaining wordless. "Am I supposed to guess who you are?" I asked. No reply. "I hope you didn't leave your fiddle double park somewhere." She stepped inside, kicked the door wedge out, and let the door swing shut behind her. "Hey, don't close that." Her response was to pull a small-caliber pistol out from under her cape and point it at me like she was about to fire. My immediate reaction was to launch myself backwards in my chair, with a vague notion somehow of performing a backward somersault that would place me outside her line of fire. However, the rear legs of my chair, unable to roll, instead merely scooted out from under me, and I ended up flat on my back, staring up at Broomhilda. She was now standing above me and sighting down the barrel of her gun, and she was aiming it directly at my face. She finally spoke her first words. "Don't move."